Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 252 for January 27th, 2020. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we will be discussing the 331st weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports and you can get access to either the web or PDF version there. Today I have arranged for Neil Batho, Michael Filigera, and Jim Kenny to join us. And Jim is going to be moderating, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Okay, good morning, everybody, and quite a morning we're having. After a very volatile Friday, we're having a very volatile Monday. What we're going to do today is going to go through what our guests are going to think about the markets and maybe some of their insights on some of the things they're focused on right now. Before we get started, everybody who is familiar with these guys, just bear with us, because for the unfamiliar, we're going to introduce everybody. We're going to start out with Neil Batho of TraderReview.net. Neil, a little background on yourself and what's going on at Trader Review.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I've said this so many times, so I don't want to bore the moderators, but I was a broker in 98-99 right out of school, and in the training they sent us to the East Coast, and it's a lot of fun when you're right out of college because, you know, it's all free and stuff, and until we had $1 million producer, they call him, and that means he brings in $1 million in revenue for the firm, which at 40 cent of, that's 400 grand 20 years ago. He told us, you're not financial advisor, financial counselor, and I thought, oh my god, how long can I keep getting a salary until I quit? So, you know, so I didn't want to be a financial counselor. I wanted to be a trader, someone who can do the research because that's exciting and see the profits of your research. You know, I didn't want to hold hands. So a couple years later, started Trader Review, used the technical analysis I learned when I was a broker, which is point figure charting. And I also use Ichimoku Cloud on top of that, and a lot of common sense and contrarian viewpoints, and send out my alerts to my clients.
That sounds good. And of course, at the end, Neil, you'll tell everybody some of the things you're focused on and also how to get a hold of you so people can take advantage of what you're doing down there.
Well, I'm focused on who brought in those lunches. Those were really good.
Yeah.
I'll back to you later on that.
Maybe if it's Jersey Mike's, I might even put an order in.
Yeah. Cheesecake Factory, we used to go there.
Oh, that's not so bad.
It's a lot.
All right, Michael, logisticalsignals.com. We've been getting a good bid in your gold area in the last few months, and that was something that you were keen on in the last year or so. So that's interesting. A little background on yourself, Michael, and also what's going on with Logical Signal.
Sure. hello, everybody. I'm Michael Filigera. I am the owner and proprietor of LogicalSignals.com. I began my trading career back in 1979 here on the Pacific Exchange Options Floor. I was a market maker, and I've traded here in the United States. I've traded in London, and I've traded in Amsterdam, and also on the German DTB. And then I came back here. I left the floor pretty much along with everybody else. And when things went electronic, and I thought I was going to retire, fool me once, you know what that goes. So here I am still back in trading, but now I've switched over to be more of a futures trader versus an options trader. I carry core positions. One, as you mentioned, Jim, is in gold, but I've been a gold bug since about 1980. And I still carry that position. And right now, I'm just day trading futures and enjoying the current volatility.
All right. And volatility is definitely what we're getting here. So let's get into some questions and start talking about what's going on right here. Okay. First question, as we have each week, is where do we think the S&P will close from this morning's opening? And today the opening was down, and it was down to 3247. So right around 3250. How are we going to close between now and Friday? Let's start out with Neil. What do you think?
Well, it's definitely going down until Friday morning. And if you want to make a killing in the market, wait until exactly 2 p.m. Eastern time. They call it the 2:30 turn between 2 and 2:30 Eastern time. And it only works when the market down all week in a panic situation like this. But you will get a move at 2 to 2:30. And you can look at the futures and look at the 5-minute chart and make a killing. And Monday we'll probably get a gap up. But it's usually too risky to hold it over the weekend because, you know, you can't sleep all weekend if you're hoping for the gap up. But chances chances of a gap up for 70-80% for Monday. So I would say down, but definitely.
All right. So because we'll get behind the curtain on what you're thinking as far as reasons and all that. But let's start out with up or down. And you're thinking down throughout the week, and then obviously a strong end of the day rally with short covering, etc. Michael, what are you thinking here between now and Friday, using around 3250 as a barometer?
I believe lower, and my confidence level at the moment, and again, next section, I'll fill that blank in.
Yeah.
My confidence level is really about 55.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in a minute, but right now you're thinking down, and basically that's it. All right. Now, behind the curtain, we're going to get a little bit further into this. Neil, you were thinking down throughout the week, confidence level, and how about some of the reasons behind it?
Yeah, confidence level, maybe 80%. I've seen this before. I saw it in the year 2000. Maybe some people out there don't remember, but I remember. And, it's hilarious because a lot of people wonder, where can I find a contrarian indicator? And the thing is, you can be your very own contrarian indicator, and you have to watch for that, because I'm reading a book called The Stock Trader's Almanac. Incredible book. Everyone should have it. I'm sure that all the trading floors in New York have it, but it basically says January is, out of all the indexes, NASDAQ is the best in January, and it's absolutely true. It happened. And, I have Jeffrey Hirsch on, I have his contact information, and I said, "Hey, Jeffrey, your book moves the market!" Exclamation point. And as soon as I typed it, I thought to myself, "Oh my God, it's a top market!" And it was, to the day. As soon as you're going to type something like that, as I'm typing it, I thought, "Wait a second, stocks are going to crash." And it's funny. And I look at other technicals, like the bullish percent is just about to reverse down into O's, and from a high level, you can't be long when that happens. And I also look at bond prices, and we've been long calls on TLT since Tuesday. We're up 150%, as well as leveraged bond ETF. And when stocks crash, bonds go up. Even though stocks and bonds can rally at the same time on a weekly chart sort of thing, when stocks crash, bonds go up basically every single time. So when I saw the bond starting to turn around Monday in the futures market, that was when I said, that's it. And bonds rallied for 3 days, stock did nothing, then bonds kept rallying and stock crashed. So we're long bonds.
Yeah, the other thing that obviously is very concerning if you're a longer-term holder of the stocks is that the 210 spread is getting very narrow again, because you can see long-term duration is really dropping a lot more than short-term duration. And so the yield differential between short-term and long-term is starting to collapse. And anybody who knows anything means if that continues and gets worse, that means people are so negative on the long-term growth that obviously those rates can even get inverted like they did a while back. And it is a pretty reasonable precursor to some recessionary talk, which is totally not factored into these prices.
Right.
Are you talking inverted yield curve?
Well, I'm saying it's not inverted now, but it's getting tighter and tighter because you're making money in those long-term TLTs, and that's going up much faster in price than the short-term. And so obviously when the back end is going up much sharper than the short-term, that means that the yields are converging. And when the yields converge or invert, it's a signal that people think that the future growth is just not going to be there. And this market here on stocks has not factored that in at all.
Yeah, didn't they drop rates? I mean, how long ago was it now? 6 months ago, specifically to prevent the inverted yield curve.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, why do you think they printed $500 billion to put into the front end T-bills? Obviously to drive those rates down and keep the yield from the curve from inverting. But if people start believing that there's nothing behind the curtain as far as earnings and growth, they're going to have a hard time keeping a 20 P/E ratio on the S&P 500 very long.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's the long and short of it. People, if they wake up and they say the earnings will not be there and the growth will not be there, and ergo then the prices really look very stupid out there.
Yeah.
But at any rate, let's keep going to Mike and Michael, and let's go over again, your confidence level was pretty good. And then what's behind the curtain as far as what are you seeing?
Well, I think that I still actually see and have faith in the melt up that was taking place just prior to all this kind of activity that we saw. And I think it again will be fueled or continue to be fueled by earnings coming in the tech sector. We've got Apple and Facebook and Amazon all coming out later this week. And, that might switch things around. But then again, it might add fuel to the fire to pull out. So that's what's up in the air. So when I say lower, but 50%, I am a pattern recognized. And so I knew that the markets were pretty overbought up at the highs reached last week, mid last week, towards the end of the week. And then when they started to come off, it's like, I really believe that that's just an inter-corrective move. And what I think we've seen, so when I give it 50%, it's because it's already come down in a nice, clean Elliott 5 waves, and that's on my hourly and on my daily chart, and which suggests that we're going to get a bounce. Now, the bounce has already started, and it's already hit a bare minimum level, again, in the NASDAQ and in the S&P, which suggests, oh, okay, so we're going to do the next down leg. So depending on when that actually comes in, that interim rally before we get another leg down, that's why I'm saying, well, we do have a possibility that it could hold itself up for the rest of the week, churn, and then flip down again. I don't think that, I mean, of course, there's enough negative things out there geopolitically, politically, and just market-wise that could start to bring it, really start selling earnings. But I think that we need to wait until we get these earnings reports from the bigger NASDAQ companies, like I said, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook. Right. And once we start getting those all in line, I think direction will be much clearer. And, you know, and again, I don't see them really ripping it apart just yet.
Yeah. Again, when you go up as high as we went, and the technical readings on RSI, put call ratio, PE ratio, whatever ratio you want to use, is all in the hot area. And you have a situation where passive investing is so popular where people are just sitting on things and they look at their statement rising every month. So there's no selling. You know, right. You are going to be in a situation where it's going to just keep going until something comes out, you know, obviously to get some selling going, which is obviously the virus, among other factors.
Well, I will tell you, the one thing that I did notice, which I thought was very interesting, is that, you know, towards the end of the day, the basket exchanges that happen at the end of the day, I mean, that's normally, you know, you're talking about hedge funds, mutual funds, that's when they kind of come in because either they have redemptions or they have new money coming in. When I saw them on Friday come in as sellers,
yeah,
and then buyers, I'm like, okay, so the first salvo was we're out, we're cashing out.
The other factor on ETFs, last week was the first week that we saw outflows in the QQQs and the SPY. So exactly. When you have outflows, obviously that your tip was Friday that you know, the outflows were starting. And when outflows start and you're extended like this, you know you're going to have order imbalances. Semis, SMH, NVIDIA, Micron, Apple gapping down. The financials do not like, go ask the banks in Europe, they don't like when the yields start converging like that. So you've had a gap down there. And of course, tech. So the leaders, you know, the froth, you know, obviously has had a gapping down situation here. But underneath, you've got moving averages, right, that are still trending higher. Yep. And like you say, there's more news coming out on earnings. Right. And so, you know, you wouldn't want to get overly crazy negative here just because of 2 days' action. But certainly the bloom's coming off the rose.
Yeah.
With regards to any particular things, you know, I was looking at some numbers, Neil, like the transports and the Russell. They both penetrated their 50-day moving averages. And the 50-day moving average on S&P is at 3195 area. Do you think, what do you see as far as the S&P is concerned? Do you think it could go after that 3195?
You know what? I missed the transports chart, but I'm glad you look at it. That's part of Dow theory, if I'm correct, right? Is that
it is? You're right.
Yeah. You can't have real rally without transport, correct?
Well, I mean, if you're not going to move goods and services and people, it's kind of hard to believe that the whole thing's going nutty. You know what I mean?
I'm just bringing it up now, the chart. But what was the question again, Jim?
Well, the question was, is like I say, we hit 3250, 3230, and now we're bouncing a little bit. The transports and the Russell took out their 50-day moving averages. Do you feel that we could make a run at 3195, which is the 50-day moving average on the S&P?
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know if it's going to go straight down. We could
bounce
even a move up or a day or two.
Right.
But I mean, you got to remember, there's a lot of these algorithmic trading operations going. We don't know what they do. But.
With regards to the semiconductors, you know, your NVIDIA, your Micron, you know, stocks like that. Do you think that their run looks like it might be over for a while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's over for semis. We bought Soxel, SOXL, a while ago, and we got some gains. We didn't hold right to the top, but when I see a huge move like that, especially, you know, it's funny, talk about contrarian indicators. Who's that guy? He's on CNBC from Option Monster, and he's always talking about options. I saw
the Nigerians
him,
or?
Yeah, I saw him on LinkedIn walking through the airport doing a video of himself talking about how stoked he was that he got some intel calls, some unusual option volume, boom, 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 et cetera. Yeah. And he was all excited about it. And you know what? If I see a video like that, someone's so excited, got this huge gain on Intel, and then Intel's way down again from that earnings call. I mean, it's over, man. It is not going to recover.
It looks very similar to IBM, where IBM got a report and went up $10, and before you knew it, it was giving $6 or $7 back. Intel went up, a lot, and then Intel's giving it back as we speak. So sometimes these things that gap up, they don't continue up if that's the last gas for a while. You know,
I remember the Phelps Dodge gap up. Yeah. Earnings. We're talking 15 years ago, before Phelps Dodge got bought by Freeport,
right.
And it could be part of the Dow, but not anymore. I remember a gap up on earnings, and that was the top of the market for 3 months.
Well, another indicator on this economy forecast would be Freeport-McMoRan itself, because it's gone from about 14 down to 11 here in the last month, and that would be an indicator. It's down 6% today. That'd be an indicator that China's drying up a little bit, and maybe economic growth is not going to be as robust because they're fading copper, and that's generally not a good sign.
I hope we get a rally today and tomorrow and maybe Wednesday, and then I'm going like that.
Yeah. Let's go over to Mike real quick, and Michael, why don't you give us a little input on what you're seeing in the gold market, because that's something you've had laser focus on here for a long time.
I have had for a very long time. It really is kind of playing. Oh, I went to the wrong market. It's, to me, gold on that, it blasted up above 1600 back, when was that? Yeah, beginning of January, whenever it was, and on some news, and then came, slamming back down. So I just thought there was a pullback, but now, even redoing my fibs on this, this rally is just too strong. And gold is not a big fan of weakness in the market, and is definitely not a big fan of anything geopolitically happening around the globe, which we have both. And so I think gold, you're either going to put on an iron condor because it's going to trade in a range, and that range could be 1542 to 1600. And so, and it could just bounce back and forth as it kind of consolidates or can receive the next big thing. So initially I was thinking that, well, I believe that gold can go lower. And then it started, but then as soon as I see them holding it, I know it's not commercials. It's not commercial users of gold that are holding this thing higher. They'll come in and buy it at any price if they need it. So I just think it's a lot of technical trading right now. I think when I go all the way out to my monthly chart, it's still pretty overbought on a momentum basis, but it did relieve quite a bit on this little slide down it just did. So I'm going to say that gold really probably still needs to go above 1600 before it does a little bit bigger correction.
Yeah, I think that 1600 you mentioned definitely is a line in the sand that's been difficult. And I'm looking at GDX, which is the gold miners, and it seems to be having trouble at 30. So if the dollar is firm, and if there's a deflationary vibe out there that these guys have to print so much money just to keep the water running, gold is not going to like the word deflation. It's not going to like the word strong dollar very long. So obviously I've concurred with you that it's a very positive market. That's of course when GDX was trading between 15 and 20. That is trading up at 30 area. It's a different ball game, and the odds have changed a bit.
I will tell you, when I pull up a chart of GDX, for the miners, no, not positive look.
Yeah. It's not a negative look. It's not a negative look. It's not a negative look. It's got a stalled look a little bit.
I think it can drop to 25.
Yeah.
So it's not a super negative look, but 25 for some of these miners, it puts a crimp in their business.
Now, if they take out the 30 number on GDX and you got momentum and there's a reason behind it, then, of course, school could get let out because there's not much resistance above that area. So the 52-week high is 31 on it.
Yeah. So we'll see if it wants to hold that. I mean, you have educated me personally, Jim. You've educated me a great deal on the 200-day moving averages and where prices get. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would think that, yes, it has a chance of getting up there, but I still think it needs another leg down. If it breaks the highs that we saw at the beginning of the year, then, which is right 31. If it really breaks 31 with some energy, you're right. Guy's the limit.
Yeah, because, again, you get over certain numbers and, they're just, it's going to be like the way stocks were at the fourth quarter where you have a no-seller environment. And so it just goes up a little bit, but never no stuff. Neil, do you do anything with Apple? Because, you know, Apple had a 200-day moving average down at like 219, and it was trading up at 323. It's like $100 above its average. Obviously, some people are now yelling out $2 trillion market cap. So as you were saying, when the market's way extended and everyone's now extending their forecast even more, you know, you find that to be unnerving, right?
You know, I don't do much with Apple other than I have it on my list. And all I remember is it goes up every single day for probably the last 20 days or something like that. But I mean, my hypothesis is that, you know, I have a lot of market cap sort of objectives on some stocks. And I'll never forget back in around 99, 2000, Cisco, I think the peak market cap was $650 billion. And anytime stocks would get up to the $500, $600 market cap level, they would sell off. And then now we have the money supply tripling in the last 15 years. And so you got Apple at close to, what is it now? 1.32 trillion.
Yeah. And half of that came in the last, 6 months.
I'm not interested in shorting Apple or anything like that. We bought puts a couple years ago and it worked out great, but I just don't do it. Too many things. I just kind of gave up on trading Apple.
Yeah. I mean, again, across the board, you got Google down $33 today. So, you know, I mean, these are all companies that are very much the favorites and they're the leaders in these S&P indexes. So when these things are coming out, what I'm getting is that they're getting redemptions. And when they're getting redemptions, they got to obviously sometimes sell things to generate the cash to pay the people off who want out, right?
Yeah.
And if you got to, again, the passive investment is great on the way up, but the risk of passive investment is when these people want out, they could want out all at one time. And there's got to be somebody on the other side to take in the sells. And at these lofty levels, today's a good example of an order imbalance because it looks like people are getting out of the index funds. And if you go to any of the index funds, top 10 holdings are the same culprits, right?
Yeah. One thing that bothers me about Google is that there used to be maybe two ads at the top of the search. Now, what is it? Four? You got to scroll way down on the page to find what you're looking for. And that's probably why their profit dropped, because they suck in more ads at the top of the page, you know? But how many ads can you put in at the top of the page before people go, you know what, Google, sorry, but I'm with ad grouping or something like that. I don't know what percent of the revenue is from the ad on those searches, but it reminds me of another indicator that I've seen many times when stocks are about to crash. And it is when car companies say the employee discount is for everyone, not just Ford employees, that gets the employee discount. Well, that's a little bit of destiny, isn't it? And then maybe Ford beats earnings, and then we go straight into recession.
Yeah. UBS, you were talking about things. You were talking to Neil about things that make you a little bit concerned about frothiness. Is UBS had a survey I saw that their wealthy investors, they surveyed them, I think it was like over 4,000, and it showed 94% expect positive returns from stocks this year.
Oh,
and
no.
it was like half of that in October. September timeframe.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's enough signals out there that this kind of a rollover is certainly not a shock to anybody. Nobody knew what the shot across the bow was going to be. Yeah. And obviously, they always blame it on something, Neil, you know that. And so they're blaming it on virus, but actually, you know, everyone was just looking for an excuse to cash in, I think.
I can tell you something I got to say from Stock Traders Almanac. And once again, got to buy a book.
Is that available, you think, in public libraries? Or is it something you got to go online and purchase or what?
No, it's on Amazon. It's just a book.
So you buy the book and they send it to you?
Yeah, it has a whole calendar of every day of the year, and it also has a couple pages where they talk about things like the presidential election cycle. And if you don't know the presidential election cycle, you have no business trading stock whatsoever. So I don't know. I mean, I didn't really know the cycle, and we did really well with my services. But now I love this book.
I just put the
cycle. Guess what?
I just put the Amazon link in the chat room.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It is awesome. I mean, the best year of the presidential election cycle is the third year of a new president's first term. And what did we have last night?
Yeah.
The next best year is the fourth year of a sitting president's term when the same president is running for re-election. But now we got a bit of a strange situation with the whole impeachment thing, right? But and then it goes through all these things, and I say, oh my God, it's exactly how it happened. You know, and then every president will prime the pump before they get elected. So what do we have now? You know, you got Fed lowering rate, and we got, you know, a lot of this Fed injection of money, but it's kind of early, right?
Yeah.
But you
know, you guys that work with charts, you know, sometimes when you get a big breakout, the market will come back to the breakout point. The breakout point on the S&P was pretty much 30-30. And so if you were bullish and you did have dry powder and we did go down and test the 200-day moving average and that level, that might be a good place to put money to work if you still are bullish for the end of the year. And if we get back down that far, you would probably be washing out quite a bit of weak hands. And so that 30-30 breakout point might be very interesting if we get down there. Do you have any feeling on that, Neil or Michael, about the breaking out of the S&P at that level and the potential of maybe going back and testing it?
If it goes back and tests, then get out of the, and it holds it, then I think you're going to be in store for a huge rally. If right. it cannot, then it's look out below.
Right. What do you think, Neil?
If you go to stockchart.com, type in the word bullish, you'll find the bullish sign, click on S&P 500. It's almost reversed 6% today.
Right.
That will turn into O's. And never in my life have I seen it this high reverse into O's and go on to new highs ever.
So you're on the point and figure you're talking about?
Yeah. So
on the point and figure, you've seen it turn into O's and you have a hard time coming to grips with the concept that we're going to make new highs above the 33.40 level because the O's generally don't turn around like that? Or?
Well, what it means is that it's a percent of stocks on near-term point and figure buy signals. So what's happening is that today you've had about 5% of stocks in the S&P 500 turn on sell signals, like break up a bottom, break a bottom, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it could be the weakest stocks. And every once in a while, like towards the end of a big bull market, you could have this indicator turn down and then things still rally, but it's just Apple, it's just Google. And right. just like in the year 2000, it was just tech stocks, right? So
right. when
you have, it's kind of like, I always picture it as like a train going up this upward train bridge and you're pulling out the little sticks below on this wooden bridge, right? That's holding up the train track. You know, and it keeps going up more, and you just take out these little wee pieces of sticks underneath, and you're like, just wait, and the train keeps going up, and you say, just wait, hold on, just a few more, and the whole train comes right out. So kind of like that. I mean, maybe we'll get a bit of a rally, but you just prepare to short and it should be great.
Yeah.
I hope, unless
just be prepared to short
here with low rates and the whole treatment and who the heck knows.
Yeah, I mean,
bizarre situation. One thing I'll tell you though is that I want to mention before, so I don't want to run on too much, but Alan Greenspan was a Phillips curver. Bernanke was a Phillips curver. Janet Yellen was a Phillips curver. The guy we have now is not a Phillips curver. And for those unfamiliar with the Phillips curve, it is a complete lie. They teach it to you in business school. Everyone at the Fed knows what it is and they try to use it. And what it says is that the lower the unemployment rate goes, the closer you get to full employment, the more chance you have of inflation. And the Fed says that it's their job to contain inflation, mm-hmm. which they can kind of do in a non-war environment like in the 90s. But now, anyway, the Phillips curve is not true because what they used to teach us is that when you have full employment, then people applying for jobs can demand a higher salary. Therefore, you have a higher salary, therefore company profit go down, therefore they charge more goods services, therefore price go up, therefore. But inflation is just an abnormal increase in the money supply compared to the population. You print money like crazy, your burger's going to go up from $12.50 for a burger, fries, and Coke to $18 to $30 to $50, And so the guy we have now is not a Phillips curver. So even though we have very low unemployment, that doesn't mean he's going to raise rates to keep inflation down, which is supposed to be what the Fed does. But since just around when Greenspan was retiring, he finally admitted that the Fed does watch the market. And we know that the Fed really just cares about the market.
Well, because if the market goes way down, let's be frank, the whole world will go nuts because these guys owe money on pension plans and people's wealth is connected to it. And the consumer spending is 75% of economic growth. So if you have people thinking they're going broke, they're certainly not going to go to the store and spend the rest of their money. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, getting people to go to the store, get their wallet moving and get the money velocity going. And that can't happen if you have a tanking stock market because consumer spending can close down in a week, in a month, it can happen very quickly, and they know that.
Before this Fed chairman, when it was Yellen and especially Bernanke and Greenspan, and you would have what are the new unemployment claims, they would go down, and that's supposed to be good, right?
Right.
Or like new jobs created would be
right.
higher than expected.
Right.
The market would sell off
because it's 100% employment is not bullish
because because the Fed chairman were Phillips curvers, so more jobs, they're going to raise rates.
Yeah, they were more rigid. And this guy is looking at the reality of we have 3.5% unemployment, but nobody's getting any wages. And so with no wages, you're not going to have a lot of people with extra money. The 40% tax cut that went to buying back their own stocks, it should have been, like Mark Cuban said, put into the agreement that a certain large percentage of it should have gone back into higher employee wages. And then the economy would get cooking because 70% is consumer spending. And if all these people had a big raise in their pay, they'd be out there spending more money. But instead, what they did is they bought their own stock backs to make the prices go way up. And of course, that helps the people who have stock options and things like that.
And it also helps the people that have had a long position. But I want to add kind of my piece here about what I think the current current Fed chair is leaning against. I really feel that that Fed chair is not beholden to the markets. I think he's actually not beholden to Steven Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary, but Mnuchin's calling the shots right now. And Mnuchin's calling the shots because of his connection to Goldman Sachs.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I see happening, because I think this current Fed chairman would have raised rates probably twice again before the start of the new year, and or at least once. And they did not. They were held back because they had to please the person who wants the cheap money. And those, of course, are the big banks. And, you know, because they got to carry this thing on. And now the other thing they got going against them, since we're discussing the Fed, and Jim, you mentioned this earlier about the repo, the nightly repo rate has had to be dropped because the Fed has got to liquefy the markets based on what all these big banks are doing when they have to rectify their books and they have to come out even at the end of every single day. Yeah, so it's costing them, you know, the Fed's having to inject another $50 billion. The Fed's injecting another $75 billion. And that's $50 billion, folks. That's a lot of money being forced into a system to keep the large boys able to reconcile their books on a daily basis. And I think that's a danger. And so that has not been really even put into anything. But it's sitting out there. So you're talking about a catalyst that's going to drop this thing like a stone. Reality will drop it like a stone. So we can continue to talk about how we're putting everything together and what everything means. But in reality, it's like, yeah, we could blow up from here, guys, and we could be looking at a Dow 35,000. We could be looking at a NASDAQ at 10,000 or higher, an S&P at 38 to 4,000. These are all things that are very possible. What's going to fuel it? Panic. Upside panic. Why are people going to panic? Well, shorts are going to panic because they're out of their hands. Longs are going to want to stay in, and people fearing that they've missed the move. And I've kind of turned that around, because I got a lot of people that come and talk to me and they say, well, gee, we don't know what we should be doing in the market. We're in ETFs and funds and we're doing okay. I said, you're going to know when you're going to have to get out. You will know.
But I mean, again, the outflows are your first tip. And I was listening to Howard Marks from a company called Oka Tree Capital or something. He's a very sharp guy, in my opinion. And he said, you know, your asset allocation models should look different at 3,400 on the S&P than it did at 2,400. Right. So if you were 60-40 stock or 80-20 stock and you're up at 3,400, take a wild guess what you should be thinking about. And that's obviously going to 40-60 or 20-80, something different. You understand what I mean?
You start to make your adjustments.
And, in other words, the guys who's in there for the long haul, they may not want to do a lot of short-term trading, but using common sense as your guide, anything that's gone from 2,000 to 3,500 is obviously had a big run. And how do you adjust your position? You obviously change your allocation stock and bond to more bond and less stock.
Right. The other thing, Jim, and I think you might agree, we don't have enough people who are in the position where they have a large audience that are coming to them for a look and for a decide, you know, what can we do or what should we do? And the thing is, it's like when you have people that are going to be afraid that they're going to miss the last 2,000 points of a rally, which has already gone up 15,000, it's like, that's where I think we need to kind of wrap people's heads around. Your fear is misplaced, and your fear really is that you're going to lose your money.
I thought I was an idiot for selling my NASDAQ ETF about a week and a half ago.
Well, you're not today, though, are you?
I know.
You know, the other thing, Neil, is a lot of traders, hedge fund guys, they made a lot of money on this run. And it's not unrealistic to think they're taking some profits on that and taking a stab at the sell side, using 3340 as a get-out point and risking some of their gains that they picked up in the last 3 months to finance it.
Right. You know what was dropping the last 6 months was high-end real estate.
Yeah.
They told me, I heard that 50% of the new condos in Manhattan are unoccupied.
Oh, yeah, I saw something about that. What are they? They're luxury condos or like Raj Mahal?
That's what I heard. I don't know. I'm not an expert at it, but 50% vacancy doesn't sound good, does it?
No, it doesn't. Hey, Jim, I want to answer a question the panelists put in.
Sure.
I went and I looked. Al is asking, has China closed their internet due to no one being able to leave the area of crisis? I did not see anything, Al, that actually said that they shut down their internet. what they've done is they've expanded the closing down of cities. So the area that has expanded and no one's able to leave. So it's not just that one province or that one city anymore. It's now, I think, two or three or more cities that have actually been surrounded, shut down, no one leaves. But it is kind of a pretty...
Well, I mean, the momentum is tremendous. I just heard on the TV that 80% drop in visitors going over to Macau. And, Wynn is getting whacked like a bad person. And Baba has gone down and basically gone through its 50-day moving average, which is 206, and it went to 199. Yeah. The 200 days at 180. So, you know, if you're a big fan of these companies and they go down towards their 50 and 200-day moving averages, then they can hold... rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater, it might be time to start looking at them, as their value has changed. So, because again, on a longer term basis, if these companies are going to be good, getting them at a discounted price from 230 to 180 or something like that is not a terrible thing.
And the other thing I think that to really watch for here, guys, is that if this virus takes hold and starts to explode in on another continent, in another major metropolitan area, not only of China, but say up here of the United States, then it's really going to spark fear. It's going to spark big time fear, because at the same time, we've got a lot of people that, God bless Netflix, but they now have this new special on Netflix about the pandemic, which was the flu of 1918 and how that spread.
Well, a good way to get everybody going. Huh?
Oh, but I'm telling you, it's out there. And then what do we get? This new virus coming out of China. And so that's become a number one seller view on Netflix. So yes, the panic and all of this information could really start to panic people. Yes. But what will that change? Nothing, because we're in a corrective mood. We're in a corrective mode anyway.
Ooh, airline stocks should be an awesome short, huh?
They should be.
We got to look at that.
They're having and all the cruise ships and all that kind of stuff. Like I say, with this passive investment, Neil, you know about this. Passive investing, there's trillions and trillions and trillions. And so if you get a situation like Michael's talking about, where the public would get nervous and want their money back, it could be a real rough time liquidity-wise, and that Fed may have to do a heck of a lot more injecting than they even have if things got that way. But I'm noticing even the good stocks that JD.com that was very popular, that's also gapping down pretty good today. Right. But again, there's a lot of real estate between these prices and their moving averages. And at this point, the only thing you can really say is they're closing the gap between the prices and the moving averages.
Right.
I watched The Big Short on the weekend, and I love that movie so much. I was talking with David, producer of the show, before it started, how we should be shorting the AA tranches of auto loan-backed securities.
But, could be the ticket that also consider student loans.
I don't think they exist, but anyway, maybe we can make a market. But I love that movie because I love ordering so much. By the time you've made your money, the hotels are cheaper to go on vacation. So I love shorting. So now just
and the dollar's firm today. The dollar's firm today.
Dollar's very firm. Now I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because I also want to toss in. It's like watch the movement in the dollar, but also watch the movement in the Swiss franc.
Well, they devalued it, and they're called a currency manipulator now. So I don't know how much you want to put into the Swiss franc.
Currency manipulator, and people that are trading these crosses, like the Canadian dollar and the Swissie, or the pound and the Swissie, are getting annihilated because they'd rather, they don't know, should I be long the Swiss or short the pound?
I need to tell everyone right now that 8% of the Swiss franc is still backed by gold.
Oh, of course, yes. What's the percentage in the U.S. dollar, Neil?
Zero. the Swiss franc used to be 40% by the Constitution, and they tricked the Swiss in a referendum back in the 80s to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And one of the parties tried to bring it back to 20% when they had still fixed the rate to the euros of 1.2 euros to the Swiss franc. Right. They said, oh, no, the economy, blah, blah, blah. And then, I'm such an idiot. I don't know why I didn't see this, but the Swiss got a new central bank chairman while the rate was still fixed at 1.2 euros to the Swiss franc. But you still could have shorted the euro to Swiss franc pair. Oh my God. God. I don't know how I missed the trade, but I could have sat there, like in that Big Short movie, put the whole entire fund's money and say, just wait. One day there's going to be an announcement. Just wait. And you would have made 30, 40 times your money. And then I'd send all the money to the client and say, have a nice life. I'll see you later. You know?
Well, I'll tell you, the other thing that was touted very big in January, as it is every year, that has turned around and gone into the tank a bit, is emerging markets, EEM, and Europe, FEZ. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Europe was supposed to have much better growth. And of course, Brexit's going to be breaking up and all that, which all still may happen. But they certainly are airing out both areas now. So if obviously you are a believer in the long term of this, this should be viewed as welcome news and a good place to obviously start investigating whether it'll stop going down. Because again, they had big runs. The moving averages are way underneath the market. They got some the virus news. They're selling it off to get that excess off, not unlike they did with gold when it ran to 1580 and then went right back to 1450 area. So, you know, again, if you're longer term positive on these things, you want to keep monitoring the things you like to see if they'll hold their 200-day moving averages and see if things settle down and view this as an opportunity to take advantage of lower prices.
Agreed.
Hey, Michael, do you have Fed fund futures on your system?
I don't have that, no. Right now, I don't.
I'm just wondering
what are you looking for?
If the perception that they will lower rates will go up due to the sell-off.
I would think, you know, obviously people believe that the Fed is basically in there monetizing any drop, you know, just in other words, you know, one guy I was listening to, fixed income guy, was thinking there could be two or three cuts this year under certain circumstances. And I guess if the stock market started to tank and we started getting weak PMIs again or something, those would be the circumstances that we actually see cuts. So anyway,
sorry,
I would think Fed funds futures discounting a cut would probably be rising on a day like today, that for sure. But TLT continues to be, you know, pretty firm here. It's right somewhat near the high. But again, everything gapped today. A lot of gapping down on the semis and the financials and the tech sector, and a lot of gapping up on the fixed income instruments, particularly long duration. And, you know, sometimes gapping up can be something that leads to further gaps, or sometimes it can be a thing where it gaps up one day and then goes fill the gap. So we'll have to see how the week unfolds. But certainly the tide, you know, has shifted quite a bit. And it's very important, I think, that this virus panic does not get everyone to go into the freeze mode or the get me out mode, because that would be very messy.
Yeah.
With regards to anything else that you guys are seeing out there, or anything that you think would be worthwhile to focus on, Neil, what are you thinking now, just to give a general idea?
We've been in bonds since Tuesday. It's the only trade we've made in a week. So I got TLT calls and I got TMF, the leverage bond ETF, and we're still holding both. I think if you don't know what to do and shorting the market is too scary for you, then go for bonds. Because when stocks crash, bonds go up. I mean, in the 2008-2009 crash, bonds went berserk. So you don't have to be a shorter and make your wife panic. You can buy bonds.
You know, I was looking at some ETFs and funds that have asset allocations of like, you know, 60-40. Stocks and bonds, and 80 stocks, 20 bonds, and 20 stock and 80 bonds. And the longer term returns you get, in my view, in my opinion, was not that dramatic to even take the additional risk. And during the drop of 08 or big drops, obviously the 80, 20, and 60, 40 have more significant pull downs than the ones that are less stock and more bonds. So at least investigating changing the asset allocation model and moderate the stock exposure up at 3,400 certainly is not a crazy idea by any means.
You know what's insane is that, I mean, the U.S. officially went off the gold standard. When was it? In the 70s when Nixon closed the window, right? Does anyone remember what year it was?
Yeah, 73 or something.
Okay, yeah, probably 70. So maybe not as early as 73, but basically from the beginning of Reagan's first term was right when rates were at a peak, and they started dropping, I think, maybe right around Reagan's first or second year. Ever since then, we've been in a bond bull market. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the interest rates, they've basically gone from like, what was it, 18%, 15%, something like that, to basically zero.
Right.
Since then. So even in the last 10 years, I think the TLT has doubled, which makes no sense, right? Mm-hmm. Other than like, you know, demand and uncertainty and things like that. And if you look at the German bonds, they have a negative yield. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you just put cash under your mattress, you know? So,
well, I mean, people do buy that because if it becomes a more negative yield, you actually make money on those bonds.
You know,
in other
what?
Words, if you're negative yield minus 0.10 and it goes to minus 0.50, people who bought those bonds at 0.10 can turn them.
Okay, that's a good call there, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that's why I've observed that. I had the same question. Who the heck's buying these bonds? And then somebody said, well, I'll tell you who. The guy who bought them at 0.10 who thinks it's going to 0.70.
Right. I guess same as the, you know, you're buying TLT or the bond, you do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
The yield's going to go down, but you're still buying. I guess once it hits zero.
I think maybe people really believe in the deflation story. And if you're a real believer in the deflation story, then obviously you can't justify higher yields. And again, the way they have to print all this money, the central bank's balance sheets were $3 trillion back in 08, and now it's at 16 to 18 trillion. So there's no question that if you want to know who financed this thing going up, it's been the central banks. You can just look at their balance sheet.
Yeah, I believe inflation's running at about 4% every year the past 15, and they rig the numbers massively.
It is under certain things that many people do. Like if you're sending a kid to college and somebody says there's no inflation, you're going to slap them in the head. Yeah. And then if you're trying to buy a house in a high demand area, they're going to slap them in the head. Right. Now, if you back out those two things and you think about what maybe clothing costs with the advent of Ross stores, where they buy discounted inventory and sell it to you at a discount, then of course it's not quite as, yeah. And then everybody leases their car, so who really cares what they cost?
Oh, you know what's interesting? I was doing some looking at cars and I had to put in minus lease because people were like, will you take over my lease? You don't have to pay anything. It's just $800 a month for this awesome car. And I thought to myself, hey, anyone out there wants the lease car? Don't go to the dealership. Look on Craigslist. You get a car a year and a half old or something, you take over the lease, you're all set. Much better deal. But I don't know where I was going with this. Sorry, Jim.
Well, with regards to loans, you know, two banks that people watch are Ally Bank and Capital One, because obviously, you know, I think they're doing a lot of different things like that. So, when people are looking at credit cards or they're looking at things like that, you know, sometimes they look at those banks that are more heavily into the business than others. Visa today. Let's take a look at Visa today real quick to see how that's going. Yeah, see, Visa, you know, is coming down as well. But again, as I see this market is, you know, as long as we're above 3,030 and holding there, you know, you still have to look at this as a correction in a bull market. And again, the excesses that were there and the lack of liquidity right now, because anybody who wants to come out, nobody wants to come in, is really the culprit on why we're getting a short-term drop of such quickness. Because, you know, you're very extended and everybody who wanted in and all the shorts got blown out. You know, Spider's short interest went down to like very historic lows, which means the shorts all got blown out. So there's not a lot of people stepping up here to buy during the rollover with this virus. And ergo, it could be, if we look back in 5 months, that this is going to be a big buying opportunity here. If we're above 30-30 and then we start advancing again, that could be very much the case.
Yeah, it can.
Now, so many variables out there, you know, that are unknown. You know, is this dollar going to stay in this trading range of 99 and 95 for the rest of our lives? Or is it going to break out? And, you know, are these interest rates going back to 1.25% or under 1 on the 10-year note? There's, you know, obviously there's people who are even saying we're going to go down to a zero handle on that stuff. So, you know, that sounds extremely aggressive, but, you know, under the right circumstances, I guess anything can happen, right?
You want to know the best recession? And I found out a couple years ago, well, it was during the financial crisis when I was watching CNBC or something like that. I don't watch it very much, but they said that the Federal Reserve, like officials there, will call the cable companies, Comcast, etc., and they say, are people paying their cable bills? Because out of all the bills, they're gonna blow off. They're gonna blow off their credit cards. They're gonna blow off.
Oh yeah.
But they will pay their mortgage first and their cable bill and their I guess the electricity is next, right? And then the cable bill. Even the car, they'll just leave it on the street, hope someone steals it, you know? So a great indicator would be Comcast or something like that. Check out their earnings or somehow find a way of people are paying these cable bills. So if anyone wants to write me from Comcast or knows the guy to call, that's how you really know if we're hitting recession.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to shake this thing out. And that's certainly probably one of them as an indicator. With regards to, we're coming to the top of the hour. So what I'd like to do right now, if we could, is go through a little bit of, again, what you guys are doing at each company. And if you have any special offers, this is a great time to shoot it out. So Neil, traderreview.net, what can people expect if they contact you and how do they contact you? And then, of course, do you have anything on a special offer basis?
Well, they first have to tell me if they're paying their cable bill. the second one is just sign up at my website and you'll get some great information on what I'm thinking on a daily or weekly basis. And if you want to sign up for my service, I give out, you know, stock and option picks right when I think things things are going to move. And I really go for the timing on the endpoints, really kind of what I specialize at, because I think that's how you minimize your risk, maximize your return.
Okay. All right. So everybody knows how to get a hold of Neil, find out what he's doing over there and see if it's up your alley. Michael, over at logicalsignals.com, again, what's going on and how can people get a hold of you?
Well, I ended up taking about 2.5 months off from trading because I was not really feeling that I wanted to participate in what was going on. But I am back now, and I came back after the start of the new year. And I am going to continue or start to provide daily analysis for trading futures. And Logical Signals. It's not quite done yet, so I haven't really put anything out there. But if you're on my mailing list, you will get notification that, oh, come check me out and going on. And I will start another trade room if there is enough interest in people wanting to actually group together to trade futures in the morning. So, but to begin, my intent is to start writing because I enjoy doing it and I enjoy following the futures markets and really just kind of helping people make or earn a good living, hopefully as a professional trader in day trading the futures. A lot less risk.
Okay. Sounds good, you guys. I'm Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. If you'd like to know my observations and my opinions on things, just shoot me an email, optionprofessor@gmail.com. And I'll be more than happy to shoot out something to you as far as my observations and my opinions. Right now, I'm shifting it right over to David. We're at the top of the hour. And thanks a lot, Neil and Michael, for being here. I think we went over a lot of good stuff, and thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. Lots of great information today, so thank you for having this discussion. Also, for everyone listening, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory or app. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past shows or the archive of this show as soon as I can get it posted. And I just want to thank my guests again for today. Michael Filiguera of logicalsignals.com. Glad to have you back after your break for a couple months. Neil Batho of traderreview.net and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.